Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
There's a cat over here. There's a cat over there. And the wrong one died. And the wrong one died.
Welcome to The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. I'm your host, Mike Abrams, and today we have another amazing guest. She's played a lot of cats, but most notably was Bombay of the Arena in multiple productions of Cats, including the second and third U.S. tours, as long as playing it in Germany. So welcome, Adria Gibbs, and thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Mike. I'm flattered to be here.
I'm excited. I actually want to start because I believe if my research is correct, your first production of Cats was the German production.
No, actually, my first production was the Los Angeles Company.
Los Angeles Company. Okay.
Yeah.
So walk me through your Cats history. Let's maybe start there because I think everything is out of order because I was going to be fascinated if you learned it in German first.
No, actually, I did it in German last. So we'll work our way to that. But I actually was one of a gazillion people that went to the cattle call for the Los Angeles Company of Cats. And I managed to make it all the way through. In fact, it's how I earned my equity card. So that was pretty exciting. Yeah, it was pretty exciting.
And this was 1980 what?
I barely remember what year. Okay, that sounds good.
Does it feel right?
Yes,
the U.S. tour was 87, 86, yeah. 87.
Yeah, so it must have been 85. The only thing I really remember is when I graduated from high school because they kind of drill that into you. And I actually have to look at my resume to figure out where I was and when I did what. Chronological dates are completely lost on me.
Sometime in the 80s. We'll just stick with that. Yeah. So you're in LA. You get through. Who did you get cast as?
I was cast as Tantomile. And Tantomile was part of the original production in both London and New York. It was actually a role that was edited out of The Bus and Truck and some of the subsequent touring companies. But I played an identical twin, supposedly. My twin was a male. My first twin was a fantastic dancer by the name of Serge Radnitsky, who was formerly with the American Ballet Theatre. And he was just tremendous to work with. In fact, we got to do a really nice little bit of a duet when we appeared on Fame, which our LA company did with on the television show. And we got to do a really nice little pas de deux, very small thing. And that was great. And then my second twin was a amazing actor by the name of Mark Oka. And so I went through two twins through the course of my history.
And Tantomile, like you said, has been edited out. It's not in every production.
Correct.
But it's mostly a dance number, right? That's the kind of core thing for Tantomile. Because it's been edited out, I actually know so little about Tantomile. And that's why when I saw you were there, I was like, well, I know a lot about Bomb. So I know I have more questions there. But tell me, like, what – we haven't covered Tantomile, like, at all in this podcast. So what do I need to know about this cat?
Well, the story behind Tantomile, she's actually one of the names that T.S. Eliot had created, and she is a witch's cat. So Tantomile and her twin brother, Korakapat, seemingly have some kind of telepathy. They have the sixth sense, what actually puts them ahead of all the other cats in terms of when, for example, Grisabella is approaching.
Okay.
So it was pretty fun.
These are the types of things I wish that the crowd knew going in, because I'm sure there's such deliberate motion and dance in every scene that you're ahead, that as the two times I saw it and seeing in the movie, I never picked up on. Just never knew it was a thing.
One of my favorite things about playing Tanto was that she was not part of the cockroach brigade with Jenny Any Dots. I love tap dancing, so it wasn't that. Tanto actually didn't do the tap dance for reasons that had to do with the Broadway production. So because they were replicating that particular show, then my character didn't do the tap dance, but they wanted me to stay on set. So what was really interesting was I climbed up to a platform on the second level. This is a Los Angeles show. And I just sat and would stare at some poor unsuspecting person in the audience the entire number. And it was hilarious because you would notice people would realize they were getting looked at, and then they would look up and they would see me staring, and then you'd see them nudge somebody else and they kind of look up, and then they'd go back to watching the number. They'd look up again and see that I was still staring at them. And it was quite fun. So
that is amazing.
It gave me a great moment. I got really, really good at staring down people.
Did anybody come up to you after saying, what was that all about?
This is really weird. So as one might imagine, you kind of can gather sort of fan bases, like people that start to kind of follow your cat. I felt this was a lot more common in Starlet Express in Germany. There was a huge fan thing there, but, and to some degree at Cats in Hamburg as well, but there were people that came back and saw the show quite a few times with the Los Angeles company. And there were people that would send me notes backstage and just tell me how much they enjoyed the performance, which I thought was really interesting because Tantamile doesn't really have a lot of standout moments, you know, compared to a lot of the other cats in the company. But I found out later too, that a lot of the ushers used to like to watch me perform because they appreciated the fact that I was giving 110% regardless of where I was on the stage. That it was, for me, it was always about delivering the very best show I could to whomever was in the back row, in the back corner of the theater, who may be having their first theatrical experience, maybe saved all their money to come see this show. Maybe this is the only live theater they were ever going to get to see. And so for me, performing for that person in the back row was the most important thing to me, regardless of how I felt, the kind of day I had, what have you. So I always felt that that was a piece of what my job was.
And it's refreshing to hear because huge sports fan, watch a lot of sports. And I don't think that that's always the case in a lot of these games that you watch at the professional level where they do kind of mail in some games. And so hearing that's like every day, 8 shows a week, that you're always going to do it because that might be the one time that one person is going to see you is really cool to hear. I'm curious to hear a little bit about the fan base is so, like, to your point, I've interviewed some people who've seen the show many times and watched one number versus me, who only saw it a couple times, kind of watched the whole thing, just mesmerized. Once you knew somebody was there, like was a super fan that wrote to you, I guess this is probably a little bit harder pre-social media days, but now you kind of get the interaction. Would you have tried to stare down that person? Did you seek people out?
If I knew they were there, I would. Like if I knew who they were and I knew where they were seated and I could see them, then I would do that. I did it to like my parents, right? when they showed up, because why not, right? Yeah. And other friends, other people that I knew came in. But sometimes, you know, it was just fun. It was just trying to find somebody that I thought might respond or I thought might, you know, connect on some level. So it was a game for me. It was fun. Yeah.
So now post LA, what's next in the Cats history? Is this the second US tour?
Yeah, it was the second national. So it's where I met up with a bunch of the cats that had done the Cats for COVID relief benefit. I came in, I was their second bomb ballerina. I came in fairly early to the company. So it was phenomenal. It was, first of all, I was flattered that I was moved into bomb ballerina, that role, because I liked that role. I liked the character. It was very different from who I am as a person. So it was kind of fun to play something different. It was my first chance to meet a gentleman by the name of Jimmy Walski, who's become a very good friend of mine. And he was our dance captain on the show. And I only had 1 week. I went in Baltimore. I had 1 week to get ready to go into the show. And the show, for all intents and purposes, the choreography was similar, but there were enough differences, you know, that I had to learn my paces again, right? And then, of course, I had to learn the new numbers in new in new stagings. What was really fun was opening night, my first show. I got into act two. I put on my Siamese costume, went on the stage and realized we had never staged the Siamese costume or the Siamese number at all. And I had absolutely no idea where it was going to go. And so all the other cats were kind of pushing me around to where I needed to be for the number. And I could hear Jimmy Walski laughing in the back of the theater because I was running around this Siamese that had no idea where they were going, getting caught on stuff, getting hung up in the curtains. It was hilarious. It was so funny.
That is awesome. And so I'm sure he knew right away, like, oh, we forgot this.
Oh,
this,
yeah.
The stage.
Yeah. He said it was one of those things, like as soon as the boat came down and as soon as the Siamese made their first appearance, it was that big oops moment.
That is great. So that production was really the first time Cats was in major cities. So I love hearing, like, what was the reaction like in, like, on tour to the show? I mean, I know it's now such a polarizing show, but back then this was a very, I mean, it was a hit. People keep calling it the Hamilton of the time.
Yeah. I think it still in its own way was polarizing. There were definitely people that didn't like the show, or didn't appreciate the show. But I think the thing that the show brought to the public was simply that for anybody who has never seen the theater or people who have seen the theater, it was an event that was very welcoming to everybody. You know, there wasn't a storyline that you had to make sure you paid complete and total attention to in order to get from point A to point B, but it had great music and catchy songs and great characters. And of course the costumes and the set and the makeup just, you know, people were overwhelmed by. Mm-hmm. So I think that was the beauty of the show. I think that still is the beauty of the show. And to me, it was really important that, you know, again, I think sometimes I'm a little bit different breed than other people, cat breed, I guess, than other people. But, you know, for me, it was really important to connect with the communities that we went through. So I was that one person that when I came out the stage door and people were asking for autographs and wanted to talk about the show, I would stay and talk to people, which interestingly enough, you could get away with ignoring people or scuttling by people very easily because it was really hard to tell actually who was on stage mm-hmm. and who wasn't with the makeup and the hair and the costume and everything. So I did have colleagues that made very quick exits and preferred not to be in the public, but I always felt like that was anybody that came and hung out at the stage door asking to talk to somebody. I felt like that was a really important part of the show too.
Mm-hmm. What type of questions did you get at the stage door with a show like Cats in the '80s? I mean, like there was a super fans, but it's not like now where now there's a lot of, you know, there's 40 plus years of content of what people know about it. This is still like the first time a lot of people probably ever got to see it.
I think it was a lot of people just wanting to say how much they enjoyed the show and mm-hmm. to ask, like, you know, where are you from and how did you start? And, you know, what, you know, how long are you going to stay with the show? And just really curious about the business, but the show itself, you know, they wanted to know how long it took to get into makeup and wigs and, you know, could we eat whatever we wanted to while we're in those unitards? At that time I could eat basically whatever I wanted to. I'd be hard pressed to get in my unitard now, but, you know,
your number is very daunting. I mean, it's a daunting, like, physical workout to do show.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, in my case, I spent, you know, 7+ years making my living on my hands and knees, right?
Something
there's a lot of people that do that, but maybe not as a cat.
Yeah. The cat, it is fascinating to know, like, the effects of the show. I am curious, there's, because I think your number, McCavity, mm-hmm. is a polarizing number in a sense of, like, there's Tugger for the moms, and someone said that it's McCavity's number for the dads. And did you feel that when you were like, when you went on stage, that you had some people that maybe weren't as interested in the show that perked up and got excited to watch now?
I don't know that I, honestly, I don't know that I ever felt that. I did have people comment, you know, that Bomb Ballerina was a very sexy cat. I mean, and that did come out in some of the articles. And actually, I heard that on a couple like radio casts and things like that too. And people were doing reviews, and it always struck me as so funny because that's so different from who I am. I mean, people meet me on the street and they're like, yeah, right, that's you. Yeah. But that's all part of acting too. Mm-hmm. You know, that's all part of becoming something that you aren't. So I really relished that kind of attitude that Bomb Ballerina had, that kind of, you know, sexy sort of sultry feline-esque persona that is just not me.
Yeah, it's definitely a number. And as I like, it's, first of all, the number is catchy as can be.
Oh yeah.
And so it gets stuck in your head all the time when you're, you know, for me, when I was researching the show, but it's a fairly aggressive dance number that I don't think I comprehended or really remembered to that extent when I saw it the first time. I mean, obviously my mind was blown the whole time I saw the first time anyways, by just everything that happened. But the more I've kind of watched, I'm like, this, I'm not surprised, is the one that gets commented on a lot.
Well, the thing that I loved about that number was getting the opportunity to perform with Demeter, mm-hmm. you know, getting to perform with my colleague, you know, it was Deborah Athens, who was just mm-hmm. Debbie Athens is amazing. And I loved working with her so much. And then when Debbie left the show, it was Jennifer Smith, who was also just brilliant. And having somebody like that, that you can connect with on stage, that's a partner, like McCavity in crime, was just so special for me as a performer, because that energy really drove me to better myself. And they were both such phenomenal performers, as were the swings that we had that performed the role, just so talented that I loved having to work up to match their level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, I talked to Debbie, and the whole relationship between Demeter and Bomb as characters is kind of an interesting one of like, are they probably sisters, but some little big sister, younger sister relationship, and almost, you know, protector with Demeter. So it's kind of fun to kind of see it play out on stage.
You know, just great memories, mm-hmm. you know, that we had a great offstage relationship that was just accelerated by what we did on stage was even better.
Yeah. Now take me to Germany.
I know that's a long trip. Are you sure you want to go?
I've talked to BK about his experience in Germany, and I did not realize that it was all done in German, which, I mean, maybe is naive of me, but how do you learn to sing a show do you speak German? I'm assuming, my assumption was no, but maybe that's an unfair assumption.
Well, interestingly enough, I took German in high school. But I found out actually when I was in Germany that I had learned an Austrian dialect from my teacher who was from Austria. So it helped to some degree, but there were definite things that I had to learn from scratch. But they taught us, we had lessons to go through all the language. And it's not only speaking it accurately, it's then singing it accurately, which is an entirely different thing. So,
could you still sing McCavity in German?
Parts of it, yeah.
Parts of it?
I could, yeah.
That to me is just, I mean, I'm blown away by that in itself. To me, German is such a harsh language. And it's definitely, you know, it's got a lot more consonants. It's not as smooth as a lot of these other languages that it could be translated into. So I am fascinated just by the idea of seeing it. I really want to watch it now in German, even though I won't be able to follow it, but I could barely follow it in English, the storyline. So I guess I'm just fascinated by that. How long did it take you to learn the song in German? And you said you went back and forth, like you came back. What was that whole experience like?
Well, I think it probably took about 3 weeks to learn. And I went over, we closed the Second National in Boston, and I went home to, California for a week, and then I turned around and flew out to Germany. So mm-hmm. It was a very fast transition for me, and they needed me to get into the show pretty fast. So it was a pretty intensive, like two weeks, maybe 3 weeks to learn mm-hmm. the show and the staging and everything. But it felt okay to me because I knew the music really well. And so it was a matter of really understanding the language. But I always thought it was really, I always thought it sounded really great in German. So that
I
was
I want to hear it. I want to hear it now. I just,
McCavity in German is, you know, McCavity ist groß und schlank und gelbrot ist sein Fell. Seine eingefallenen Augen und verraten ist er schnell. So kind of, I don't think that was all right, but it's been a while. But that was pretty cool. And actually my favorite lines to sing, or my favorite bit to sing anymore, is actually when I did Grisabella in Germany, the song Eine Zeit, als das Glück für mich doch Wirklichkeit war. I just thought was a really great line. So
that's amazing. I'm just blown away by the fact, and I know it's been, you know, in there's productions in Japan, and I mean, it's been translated into a lot of different languages because it's, you know, it translates, but right. It just is so, so different and such, you know, like these are iconic songs that are now going to be in an entirely different language and kind of take some of the poetry into it. So I've always really enjoyed that.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
I want to talk a little bit about the plot. I am fascinated by what you were told about your characters. So when you were learning Tantamile and Bombay the Arena, what were you told about their backstories?
Not a whole lot.
Not much.
To be honest with you. Yeah, it was, of course I'm older now and my brain is fuzzy. So maybe I was told a whole lot and I just don't remember it. No, actually there wasn't a whole lot told to us. A lot of it was, you know, it kind of was called out of the rehearsals. You know, I did have an opportunity to work with Gillian Lynn and Trevor Nunn in the Los Angeles company, which was amazing. And they were actually able to kind of, you know, give us some insight and talk a little bit about the expectations of the cats, not necessarily the characterizations, but the expectations. And then, like for the twins, you know, for Tantamile and Coracopat, it was, you know, you guys are connected by a psychic bond. You do things together. You hear things together. You, you know, you have this connectivity. So the rest of it was kind of, and your cat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was kind of what it was, yeah. Right? Right. And with Bomb Ballerina, it was sort of a similar tale. It was like, you know, she's sexy, she's sultry. She is protective of Demeter. You know, she's smart. She's slick. There was one point where it kind of said she was the counterpart to Tugger. You know, the female counterpart to Tugger.
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
Yeah. So that was kind of the gist of, of that particular character. And part of the beauty is, you know, that also gave us the freedom to really be able to develop what directions our own characters, individual characters, would go. So while there were similarities from show to show to show, you know, you would see one Bomb Ballerina here, you'd see one Bomb Ballerina there. There was consistency, but there were also those same differences that you would find if you saw any other show.
Yeah.
Between, you know, one, you know, from one performer to another, because they bring their own personality and characterization.
Mm-hmm. It's really fascinating too, the look of it, as I've tried to, you know, one thing I was early on trying to solve was the Katz family tree. Who's mom, who's dad, who's brother, who's sister. And there's no rhyme or reason to it. And I think the reason that I've kind of come to the conclusion of is that too much is related to friendships off stage. And so there might be two cats that, like, the twins are twins, but if there's cats that are supposed to maybe not be as close, but they're really good friends from a different, you know, from performing in another show, then they might have a really strong chemistry on stage, even though the cats technically might not have that relationship that you would see, but the audience notices it. And so sure. The audience thinks there's a relationship. And so there's no way to be able to say, like, I've got a few. I think Demeter and Bomb are sisters. I think there's, you know, there's some relationship between Demeter and McCavity. Like, there's a couple of things that are consistent across all shows. But then it's just a free-for-all.
Yeah.
Well, I think over the years.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, too, because we've gotten into, you know, backstage, we talk about what kind of relationships we thought there were among the cats. I mean, it's discussions we have ourselves, and we talk about things like the costumes, the way the costumes are designed. Is there an intentional relationship behind some of the designs? Because some of the cats have the white, you know, kind of the white chest area. You know, Bombi has it, Demeter has it, Syllabub, you know, a few others have kind of that white. But there's color variations, and the color variations, does that mean that, you know, is Syllabub Demeter's daughter? Is, you know, so I think there's always that kind of interesting sort of question. I mean, is Victoria somehow related to Rumpelteazer because they're both, you know, they're both white, even though Rumpel's got the orange and yellow and, you know,
There's only a couple that wear collars, which a lot of people wonder if they're owned by the same human.
Correct.
Type of thing. So there's a lot to it. It gets really, really crazy if you start, like, trying to look through the rumor mill, because there's no rhyme or reason to it.
And cats, I'm conspiracy theories.
Yeah, I'm wondering how many I've made up too, just to, like, try to add to things. But I've enjoyed it. That's what's made the show so interesting, because I'm very interested in it from the story. From the storytelling aspect of it purely, because I'm not a dancer, I'm not a singer, I'm not a theater major, or, you know, I have no background on that. And so I really enjoy the storytelling, which I think I want to get into. But before we do that, I want to hear a little bit about the benefit, because there was a benefit that happened late last year, 2020, that was for by your cast, that because you did this incredible benefit when you were on tour, and then you kind of brought it back. So tell me a little bit about it. Tell me about your involvement, and what, you know, what kind of sparked this idea.
Well, you know, we did one of the very first benefits ever for AIDS in Kansas City as a tribute to Michael Bennett. And that was really our company was very dedicated to doing whatever we could to be of service to our Broadway brethren and sisters who were suffering through this really difficult time in history. And people were not understanding what it was. And there were a lot of people that had turned away from a whole variety of entertainers because they were like, oh, well, you know, they're pariahs, right? And this was an opportunity for us to try and celebrate those who were in a very difficult position and wanting to do what we could to make sure that they had what they needed to be able to get through this horrible, horrible event. And so I think that when opportunity presented, when Austin Jaton reached out to Jonathan Cirullo and said, hey, isn't there something that we can do? it was in the spirit. It was in exactly that same spirit that we had cultivated, you know, so many years ago together as a company. And it was amazing how quickly everyone drew together to say, yeah, let's do this. Let's make this happen. And it had been a long time since a lot of us had been in contact with one another. So while we were focused on doing, again, what we could to help people who were suffering through COVID, it also was a way for a lot of us who were very isolated to be reminded of that special bond we had with one another when we were touring together, and really rekindle some friendships that perhaps had gone dormant, had never gone away, but were just dormant. And it has been a side benefit of the benefit that we have now regularly been connecting and sort of reinvigorating ourselves with these friendships that we had so long ago. And a big piece stemmed out of this collective belief that helping others is the right thing to do.
And so you had an event. And
we did.
Yeah. I mean, and it was, I loved it. I watched it when it came out, and it was for COVID relief. And so, how did the idea come about? I mean, that I loved hearing the backstory of like how to help, but how did the idea come about for actually the event? Cause I think you re-recorded a song, and you re-recorded a version of Memory, right? For the event.
Correct. Well, it was really amazing. You know, we've got some incredibly talented people that were part of the company that have gone on to different aspects of theater, or other realms in general, other industries. And there was a core group of individuals that pulled together that actually wrote the script, and put time and energy into cultivating something that was going to be a message-driven program, founded out of our Cats Collective. So we did the opening song, and there were a variety of us that did the recording together, independently, solo. Nothing like singing by yourself, trying to, you know, remember something from, you know, 2000 years ago, trying, you know, and there's not an orchestra, and there's nobody else to help you. You're just barren in your own room. It was pretty interesting. But then it was all, you know, everybody recorded their bits, and then it was all engineered and put together beautifully. And there were these different segments that were directed by different folks from our group. And it was honestly a team effort to pull this off and put together something that wasn't just a one-off song, but it was really a whole event. It was really a whole spectacle that was bringing everybody together, but also highlighting how important it is to support members in our community, especially during this time of COVID, when so many of our fellow performers and stage managers and dressers and makeup team and, you know, wig designers and costumers are all out of work.
Yeah. I mean, and it's, you know, it's great to see the amount of money already raised. I love that. And, that it's still, the donation page actually is still up. So I will put the link in the description for anybody listening to, you know, anything that you can give and to donate. It's very much appreciated to support the community. But it was, you know, it's cool to see that come full circle from your Kansas City event to bringing back today and still always about supporting the community.
Well, I think that's the thing that's really interesting about the theater community is as large as it seems, it's actually very small, and it's not even a 6 degree of separation between people. So it's really important when you are in a position to be able to help others that you do that and raise them up, because it's about community.
So I want to do a little rapid fire, getting to my favorite question to ask everybody from this musical. Uh-oh. So, but before we get to that, let's do a couple quick fun ones to kind of ease into the $1 million question. If you, I know you've played a couple cats, but if you had the opportunity to play anyone, ignore if it's in your vocal range, male, female, if you could play any cat, which one would you want to, which track would you really want to do?
Oh, that's interesting. You know, I think I've already done it because I got to play so many of the cats I wanted to.
So who's your favorite to do?
Boy, that's a loaded question. this is going to sound like a cop out, but each one of them represented such a different time in my life. I mean, each one is tied to very specific memories and very specific experiences I had. So, hey, I don't know.
I'm asking a parent about a favorite child, I feel like.
You are. I think you are. Because yeah. I can, you know, the very last cat I played actually was Rumpelteazer. And, you know, that's interesting because I was, you know, the oldest I was in my career playing this young kitten, kind of a giant kitten. I was a big kitten. But, you know, that kind of in some ways coming full circle around to playing that, you know, the juvenile, if you will, was interesting from kind of going through the only cats I really didn't play, the female cats I didn't play. I never played Victoria or Syllabub or Jelly Lorum. So there were a couple that I never did play, but I also don't know that they were ones that I ever wanted to play either.
Yeah. Okay. So let me rephrase this question. Which of the male tracks would you want to do?
Oh yeah, that's tough. Gosh, I would probably, I don't know. I might default to Tugger because Tugger being sort of the counterpart to Bombi would be kind of fun to play from a male perspective. Mm-hmm. And that's probably a pretty popular one for a lot of people to say.
Yeah. A lot of people say it, but I also think, you know, you saying that it's kind of not your personality. It's sometimes the fun of acting
it's the opposite against type. I also think Gus would be amazing to play.
Then you got to do Bustopher though, and a couple others with that. Right.
And yeah. And Bustopher I thought was hilarious.
Yeah.
So, you know,
okay.
I think there's some value to that.
So you just want to play you just want to do every single track. Well, this is going to be a hard question then, I guess, for you next, which is your favorite and least favorite cat?
Oh, my least favorite cat. Huh. I suppose I could pick one like Jemima that no one ever sees because she's not in the company anymore.
Jemima was canceled, I believe.
Yes, she was. She was knocked out. Et cetera was another one that wound up morphing into another cat. So
it's a very good safe answer. I like that. Because you can't anger anybody with that, really. No. What about favorite? This might be hard with the same thing. You've played so many of them.
I would probably have to say Bomb Ballerina just because I played her the longest. Mm-hmm. And I got a chance to experience her on tour as well as in Germany. And I think that's pretty special. You know, mm-hmm. she took me overseas for my first foray into working in Europe. And so I would say for that reason, yeah, she's probably my favorite.
Okay. Favorite song from the show?
Favorite song from the show? Well, I love McCavity.
Yeah.
I mean, who doesn't love McCavity, right?
That's my answer. I think my answer was always Mungo Jerry and Rumpelteazer when I first saw it, because it was stuck in my head for like weeks after. But the more I've researched it, the more the McCavity song gets stuck in my head every time.
Mungo and Rump was, I will admit, is really fun, especially when you're doing the double cartwheels. Yeah. So that was just really fun. But I also, I'm really partial also to Jellicle Cats, the opening number, mm-hmm. because that just sets the stage for the whole evening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's not a really bad choice. I haven't heard anybody be like, oh, this was, I, you know, there's so many good options.
I don't know. People might say Peaks and Pollicles is not a great choice.
That's fair. I've not heard anybody say that as their number one. So that's probably fair. Okay. So my $1 million question. This entire podcast is named and based off the fact that I did not think Grisabella was the right choice to ascend to the Heaviside Layer. Do you agree with me? And if so, who would you pick? And if you disagree with me, I'd love to hear your defense of Grisabella.
Interesting, because I did get to play Grisabella in Germany. So I do have some tender thoughts about her. Mm-hmm. In terms of who was going to go to the Heaviside Lair, I think Grisabella was a good choice, but I don't think she was ready yet, to be honest with you. I think that she still had more to do in her current life to come back and be celebrated the way she was. I really think that it should have been Gus going.
Love it. Team Gus. It's the most common answer because I think it fits the right narrative based off of if you really break down who's probably ready to go.
Yeah, he was tired. He had done what he was meant to do, and he still reveled in that. But it was probably time for him to travel onward. Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm a fan. Anytime somebody says Grisabella is the wrong choice, so again, this has been great having you on to chat through it. I really appreciate you taking the time. Any parting words from your cat's history before we take off?
You know, I feel so fortunate to have had the opportunity to be a part of that show, from being part of the original company in Los Angeles, getting moved over to the second national tour, which was interesting because a lot of my colleagues in Los Angeles actually went to the Bus and Truck, which was a new company that formed just after the Los Angeles company closed. So a lot of them moved to that company. I thought I was going to go there. I found out later that the reason I didn't was they knew they had an inkling that this opportunity would come up at the National, and then actually the National too, and wanted to move me over there. So I had the tremendous blessing of working with this National 2 company, which continues to be in my heart, as does LA, but there's just this really special bond with that group. And then I got to go and live and work in Europe and do, you know, not only Cats over there, but Starlight Express. And also did a lot of directing and choreography when I was working over there as well. So the show has given me so much in terms of memories, no pun intended, or memory, and just having been able to do and see and experience so much, you know, I may not have a dime to my name, but I am so wealthy when it comes to the friendships and the experiences. And for me, it's about paying it forward. You know, it's talking to people that are still interested in the show. It's those nights of standing outside, you know, for an hour, 2 hours at the stage door, talking to people. That is, I think, the best part about being in Cats for me.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your stories and your thoughts on the show and your experience with the show from, you know, across the globe, which is always so fun to hear.
Oh, it's been my pleasure, Mike. I've kind of enjoyed going down this this path.
Yeah, a little bit down memory lane.
A little bit, yeah.
Well, thanks for listening to this episode of The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. To follow along, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Wrong Cat Died, or check out our website, thewrongcatdied.com.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.